We talk a lot about broken school systems, but my next guest, David Bidler, argues we might be ignoring the most important system of all, the human body. As the founder of Physiology First, a nonprofit focused on the brain-body connection, he believes that every child is limitless. Someone else believes that too, but that our current educational software is running on outdated or neglected hardware. He's here to explain why the majority of clinical disorders in kids are actually just biological needs going unmet, the biological ROI of education, and how physiology is the missing link to unlocking true capacity in our students.
Welcome to the Future of Education podcast, hosted by Mackenzie Price. Mackenzie is the founder of a revolutionary new school model that's disrupting education through AI. Join us as we discuss the latest in education innovation.
David, thank you for joining me. I am really excited to talk more about the science of the limitless kid.
Mackenzie, I am so honored. I can barely contain myself. I've been watching what you've been doing to reinvent education, to prepare kids for an exponential world, and to really, really put an empowering new vision for the future of learning and practice. So I'm so honored and grateful to be with you.
Well, I love watching you too. I've seen you on Instagram as well. And I think that we are very much kindred spirits, because a lot of what you probably have more of the science around is stuff that we have kind of intuitively built up in our program over the years. And in some ways, I think when we think about it, people go, this, of course, makes sense. Why are we treating young people and human bodies in a way that is so stagnant, you know, and just challenging for them? But let's start with just a very basic. How do you define physiology?
Well, physiology is how systems function. And if we can think about where learning would ideally start, if we could just reinvent the whole thing right now, we'd probably learn how our brain works. Mm-hmm. How our body works, how our breath works, how we work. And if we can, you know, if we can help a generation of kids understand their own physiology, how their body and their brain functions, I think we open up the gates to just limitless human potential. But education hasn't done that. We've learned about everything other than ourselves. So Mackenzie, yes. for the past 10 years, I've worked with adults who come to me at 30 years old, 40 years old, 50 years old. They don't know how their feet work. They don't know how their breath works. They don't know how the food that they eat becomes energy. They don't know how to get a good night's sleep. So they have all of this information, but they are so limited in self-knowledge. And yet we're in a world where the most important knowledge set that we can build is knowledge of self. Because we don't know where the future is going, but we can know ourselves at a deeper level.
David, you've argued that physiology shouldn't just be a health class topic, you know, covered very basically. Oh, here's, you know, 15 minutes of a lesson in breath work, but it needs to be a prerequisite for any modern curriculum that we're doing. So paint a picture for me of the difference in outcomes for a student who is maybe not prioritizing physiology versus a student who is.
The main difference is that the student who isn't is fighting their physiology every single day. They are put in a position that is oppositional to their own potential. So if we look at the brain benefits of exercise, the brain benefits of sleep, the brain benefits of a nutritional approach that actually supports full body health, you remember that we're built to thrive. These kids are built to be little energy machines and little idea machines that are thriving at such a level that we can barely keep up, right? That's what we should be seeing. And if we can remember that there are physiological prerequisites, baseline prerequisites for optimal mental and physical health, then we only have two choices. We can tell a cultural story and pretend that they don't exist because they're incredibly inconvenient, or we can honor them. And when we honor them, we bring out the potential in the child. When you think of the difference of a child who's regularly getting a good night's sleep, now currently 7 in 10 high school students in the U.S. get insufficient sleep on a regular basis. 7
right.
in 10. And what happens when we sleep? Well, it's where the brain puts yesterday's experiences together. It's where the memory formation occurs. It's where I have to ask, what do I put in long-term storage? I can't remember everything that I've seen yesterday, so I have to remember the critical, the essential. It's where learning happens. And yet 7 in 10 high school kids get insufficient sleep for optimal learning, and we've normalized that. We've normalized a cultural relationship to exhaustion. What if we normalize optimal health? What if we normalize the kid and the parent waking up feeling rested, feeling ready to rock? Well, the only way that we're going to get there is to give them the skills, tools, and knowledge to access that state.
And this problem has really traveled down to younger and younger ages. You know, it's we hear a lot about high school students needing more sleep, but we're seeing this now in elementary kids. And I actually think you paint a really good picture when you were saying about, you know, kids that are not having their bodies be prioritized. When you think about a toddler, you know, a toddler who's getting rest, they have limitless curiosity. They're constantly able to assimilate and learn new information. And then we put kids in traditional schools where they're basically told, be more still, you know, be more quiet and, you know, kind of learn to listen and take direction and do that. And so no wonder we see kids start to develop this, you know, kind of basic relationship with, well, how was your day? It was whatever. You know, and that's just such a challenge for us.
We have to break the generational cycle of accepting a mediocre existence. And when you surround kids with adults who do not accept mediocrity in our lives, I expect to feel pretty awesome when I wake up because I put the work in, because I went and learned about my physiology, because we're the only species who can. What I say to high school students a lot, Mackenzie, as I say, as a fun thought experiment, imagine that every squirrel could do research on every squirrel to be a squirrel. It's okay. Well, this particular strategy for gathering nuts has worked suboptimally. This has worked better. We are the species that can look at what works. And we know that meeting the physiological prerequisites for brain health is currently not at the foundation of our modern model for education. So right. I always said, Mackenzie, that if education was truly about learning, it would put brain health first because our brain is what we learn with. So it seems like it's about something else. It seems like it's maybe more about learning to follow in lockstep. Maybe it's more about obedience than it is about empowerment. But what you're doing at Alpha Schools is flipping the paradigm and saying, what if we actually gave these kids the skills and tools to run with their wildest dreams and to be prepared physiologically to catch that dream? And you're not going to do that on an exhausted, malnourished state.
No, absolutely not. And I think so often what, you know, happens in the education world, it's a tough world. Most people are feeling downtrodden, overburdened, overworked, intimidated by a system that just seems too big to change. I choose to live in a completely different world where it's like, no, we are going to make these changes. And so one of the things I always love with this podcast is I want the people who are listening to be able to see like, okay, I have the ability to make some changes right here today that are going to benefit my child or my student. So let's break that into two things. First of all, I'm going to ask you, what does a physiology first classroom look like? So for those educators or administrators who are listening can say, okay, I can make some of these changes. And then I'm going to ask you the same question for as a parent, what you can do with your kid.
So, you know, we have created, to give a bit of the backstory, you know, we've created an alternate model of education ourselves. When we first started Physiology First, we were working to take this into traditional schools. And the traditional school system was not incentivized to put physiology-based education at the foundation of the learning process. They didn't have the capacity to do it if they wanted to. It's too big a machine to turn around and be nimble and agile as the needs of the child evolve. And we got tired of being on the other side of a door begging to come in when the kids in our community are suffering from unprecedented levels of depression, obesity, anxiety, social isolation. So we said, let's build a model where the kids can come to us. And we built our Physiology First campuses as a whole health education experience for the whole family and the whole community.
I love that you are doing exactly what I had done because I beat my head against the wall of first my children's traditional school where they just said, you know, no, we're not interested in evolving in the ways that you see, you know, that we'd like to. And then more recently, I've had the same thing as I've tried to get public school access and they've said, no, thanks. We do not want what you are, you know, offering. We're not doing it. And so I've very much been on the let's build our own model and then allow families to opt in to, you know, what makes sense. And I think that is a great way to do it because I bet what you're doing is also providing so much inspiration through the examples of what you're setting that are going to help knock those doors down over time. So tell me what does your campus look like that's physiology first?
Well, you know, I want to just piggyback off what you said. We're also setting an additional example for kids, which is that the future is ours to build. And the jobs of the future aren't here yet, and the infrastructure of the future isn't here yet. And these kids are pioneers on the edge of a new age of evolution. So when they see us build new models instead of knock on the door and beat down the door of the old models, they are called to their potential to build new things in the world. And that alone is us working to lead by example. look, we have to build things that the world needs and doesn't exist yet.
It's a great reminder, and we should totally be doing that, because that is what the future is going to look like for kids. Is you got to go create what it is that's going to add value to the world and unlock that potential of that person. Okay, so tell me more about these campuses, what you've done with them, where are they, how do they work?
So when kids and families, because it's massively family focused, it's massively community centered, but
it really needs to be, right? You can't have, usually I'd say the health of a family is very connected, right? Each individual in the family probably has a connection to what the health looks like.
It's completely interconnected. And I can say to anyone listening that the number one motivational factor in a child's life that we've seen is that their parents have the skills and capacity to model health. Now, the challenge is they haven't been taught that. And the challenge is that we end up in a game of finger pointing where we say, what we see a lot, and you must see as well, is the public school system says, well, it's up to the parents, and the parents says it's up to the schools, and both fingers get pointed in opposite directions. If we can point the finger at ourselves and say, what if I could learn these skills? What if I could model, co-regulate, self-regulate, and put a health program into practice in my own life? That is what I've seen in 10 years of experience be the most beneficial, is that the child sees health is normalized, but many kids don't have that. So what we've done is we've created a program called Student Strong, which is 100% free for teens. Our other services are paid. We run a robust health optimization business. But the Student Strong program is an access point for every young person who wants to learn about the power of the brain and body.
Oh, so very cool.
It's very, very cool. And they come here in droves. So a myth I want to help to bust is the myth that all of these kids are lazy, unmotivated, and living on their phones. I think that we have a correlation equaling causation fallacy going on. The child who's walking around staring at TikTok and scrolling themselves into a dopamine deficit state was looking for the mentor, the infrastructure, the open door, the adult in the room. And when we open the door, the phones go down immediately. So kids come in after school. As of right now, it's predominantly an after-school program. I've never asked a young person to put down their phone or take away their phone in my entire life. My job and my team's job is to be far more interesting than phones. Mm-hmm. And we can do it. So as soon as they come in, they kick their shoes off. All of our training is barefoot. It is the opposite of the sensory deprivation that we've normalized in modern education.
Yeah.
We need to feel connection to the ground. We need to feel alive in our bodies. And it might, you know, be cool to learn how our feet work because we're standing on them. So kids come in, shoes are off. Immediately we're engaging them, maybe in intellectual exercises, you know, creative exercises on how we might build the campus. We're engaging the mind from the moment that they walk in so that TikTok has disappeared from their mental landscape. The Snapchat message is not on their mind. And then we have a lesson each day that we're then going to put into practice experientially. So let's say that the lesson has to do with breathing and stress and anxiety management and mental focus. And let's say that the lesson is that nasal breathing is the optimal way for us to breathe. And we increase cognitive capacity. We increase oxygen delivery. Lots of benefits. Maybe that's a 2 or 3 minute talk with a lot of jokes and a lot of engagement from the kids, like a lot of questions that we can ask them. And then we immediately make one of them the DJ, because they have to have a sense of autonomy. And they're not in another hierarchy. They're in a real, true learning environment. So they take control of the Bluetooth. Suddenly, we have not done the thing that happens so often, which is the failure to make a thing cool. When you're a kid, you want to be at a place that's cool. Mm-hmm. And when you give them control of the atmosphere, they set the tone of cool. Now they feel at home. Then we take them through a series of warm-ups that they learn to lead. And the warm-ups are exercises and how our body works. Bear crawls, crab walks, different types of jumping, hopping, rolling. And you can see the shift in the human nervous system. These kids often come from the traditional educational world. They come in looking like they've been through a 12-hour day at the factory. I mean, they're just exhausted. The spark is out of their eyes. And our job is to get that spark rekindled. So once they've done the warm-up and they're physiologically ready to train, we have them execute a workout that they've learned the architecture behind, meaning they know why we're doing it, they know what it does. And we use the workouts, let's take a squat or a deadlift or a lunge, we use them as chances to really teach them how their body works. You can tell somebody that to perform a squat, you send your hips back and squat down.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can ask, well, what would my feet ideally be doing? And what is the relationship to my tibia, my femur, my ribs? How might I breathe on the way down? How might I breathe on the way up? So by the time that they've gotten a workout that has taught them stress management, anxiety management, mental focus, anatomy, and physiology, and while listening to their favorite tunes and laughing with their friends and wanting to come back tomorrow, we then teach them how to recover from that workout. So let's say that we've gotten their heart rate very high, and we show them a simple breathing exercise to take it down, 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 down. We're always then making sure to close the loop and say, you know, where else can you practice that? Where else is state management a skill, stress management a skill, recovery a skill? And they'll tell us it's when I'm stressed before a test, I'm doing public speaking, I'm applying for a job. We make sure that we're tying the skills that we learned in the training environment to life. And then it's off to the sauna and cold plunge. And the brain benefits of sauna and cold plunge alone are astounding. The agency and autonomy of high school kids chopping wood, because I'm not doing it. I'm not, you know, it's not a spa. So we make sure that they're ready to do the work. They're chopping wood. They're getting out the peppermint oil for the fire. They're putting ice in the cold plunge. And what you watch in 60 minutes is a physical and mental transformation from my energy is flat. I am exhausted. I'm disconnected from my power. It's like plugging a power source back in. Yeah. And the kids who come year after year, their level of self-knowledge, agency, and health education, it's astounding to watch these lessons accumulate and impact.
Well, what I love about what you're saying is in the end, you're creating a feeling of connection within a person's mind, body, and spirit. And, you know, I think it's so easy for us to lose that connection. In fact, one of the things that my husband is a Jedi master at understanding, although it's not really due to his great talent. It's more my gives, which is all of a sudden be sighing, and he'll go, "What's wrong? What are you stressed?" And I don't even recognize that I am trying to have that physiological response. It's when I take some time to do some regular breathing, you know, do some box breathing or whatever, then all of a sudden I go, "Oh, these sighs are really wanting to come out. Let's examine what's going on that's causing that. You know, where am I feeling that? You know, what's making me feel that way?" And the trigger. And then the other thing I have to tell you, David, I've never heard it said so well. And again, it should be an obvious thing, but it's something that I do. The moment I get in the car with my either of my two daughters, who are now 18 and 20 years old, the first thing I do is I hand them my phone, Bluetooth, and say, "Pick the music." Because you know what? They have a lot more interest in hearing me kind of dance and sing a little to their songs versus my music, where they will say, "You know what? Let me put my own AirPods in and, you know, just listen to my own music." It is a tried true measure. So if there's parents out there listening to this, just give your kids DJ control, and it will actually open up so much more relational connection than trying to say, "Let me teach you about the music I love from the 90s and why Nirvana is so good," you know, whatever that is. So I think that's a really, really great piece of advice.
That wraps up part one of this episode, but don't worry, there's a part two coming soon. Thanks for listening to Mackenzie Price and the Future of Education podcast. If you haven't hit that subscribe button, now is the time to do it so you can stay up to date on all our episodes. You can connect with Mackenzie on social media and be part of our daily conversation over on Instagram at futureof_education. Lastly, if you're loving what you're learning, please leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll be back in your feed soon, but until then, remember, kids are limitless, and it's our job to unlock their potential.